Oh my god, the Colorado Rockies are over 500 in August.
What?
What is happening? What is happening?
Lying, you are a liar. Wait, is that true? They're actually 500? Over 500?
Yeah, 54.
I haven't paid attention.
When did that happen? What happened? What happened there?
I honestly don't know.
I really have no explanation for this. And I don't know how to record a podcast in August in which they're good.
We should go back to each one of our August podcasts in the last 2 years and then see what we were talking about.
Listen to what the headlines were.
Yeah.
I don't know how to process what's happening, and I'm not really comfortable enjoying it because I know how short-lived it'll be.
To recap, the Rockies, since the All-Star break, are 14-5, which is the best mark in baseball.
Yep.
They are 54-53. They are 7 games back in the division. They are 3 games back in the wild card. They have won 11 of their last 13 games. They have a run differential of plus 22. And they are finally above 500 at home, which seems like they haven't been for a long, long time. What we're trying to say is the Rockies are going to win the World Series.
Well, the Universe Series, maybe.
The Universe Series, which I invented last night.
Yep. Anthony came up with the Universe Series. These are the August episode titles for our last 2 years. This is season number 3 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. Last year, our final August episode was Finding Tyler Matzik. That was when I went to Albuquerque and got a chance to catch up with Tyler Matzik. The one before that was Kinder Gentler PDP. And the reason that we had to come up with Kinder Gentler PDP...
Because everyone was so angry.
Everyone was so mad. And they were so upset with us for like leading the charge of everyone being mad. Our previous episode of that was Pitch Stupid, which was an interview that we had with Jason Hirsch, in which he said, you know, you gotta stop thinking. You just have to go out and pitch stupid. The one before that was about John Gray. That was Gray Day Cometh. So those were the 2015. 2014, the episodes were After Rockist Comes Butt-tember, and that was when Eddie Butler came up. James Smythe for GM, which I still would be, I'd be behind that movement. Happy Birthday and Happy Trails, which was, we were talking about retired numbers and Todd Helton's birthday and yada yada. And then I just came up with the title for episode number 24, which was On Porous Borders. I still don't know what that means.
What the hell's wrong with that?
Oh, that was when we had Nick Groke on, and now Nick Groke hates us. So,
Yeah, well, hates you.
Well, no, hates you. Everybody hates you. I'm the innocent one of this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure he would beg to differ.
No, he and I are best friends. We talk about you all the time. Everybody talks about you. These are the things you don't know, Anthony. You, that's what you sound like. So, hey, I'm Tyler Vaughn. He's Anthony Masterson. It is episode number, what the hell episode is this? 83? My goodness gracious. Of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. I don't know really where to go from here. Richard Bergstrom from Rocky Singers will join the show coming up in a little while. There's a lot to talk about. The Colorado Rockies are good at baseball, and I don't know what that means.
Well, I can tell you what it means.
It likely means sure death for us all.
Well, that's exactly what it means. But what it does mean, in fact, is that the Rockies are getting it done on both sides of the ball.
What?
As it were.
There's never an offseason for talking Broncos football.
In that 13-game stretch, they're averaging nearly 6 runs a game. They've hit 20 home runs, and their starting pitchers have an ERA of an even 2.
No,
they have 11
right.
11 quality starts in the last 13 games. Their starting pitching has only allowed 4 home runs in their last 81 innings.
No,
a 2.15 opponent average, a 6.19 opponent
right.
OPS.
That's not right.
I'm just saying.
That can't be right. None of that is right.
I'm just saying. They've only had a guy go less than 6 innings twice in that stretch. One of those was John Gray, the other in the first game against the Dodgers when he threw 96 pitches in 5 innings but did strike out 6 of shutout baseball. The other was when Tyler Chatwood walked 8 in 5 innings against the Braves and still somehow, you know, came out of that one
squeaky
clean.
Yeah, how the hell did that happen? John Gray... When you look at John Gray's numbers, you look at the numbers of a guy who you think pitches for another team. John Gray is currently 8-4 with a 3.77 ERA, 120 strikeouts, and 114 and two-thirds innings, and an opponent's average of 223. But more importantly, it's now five straight starts in which John Gray has allowed two or fewer earned runs, two or fewer runs, period. Last time out, the pitch count got up a little bit too high against the Dodgers. He still came away with the win, but John Gray has dropped his ERA from 4.67 to 3.77 over just his last four starts. And at home this season, John Gray is 5-0 with a 3.83 earned run average.
Let's talk about this, because we talked about this a lot on Twitter last night.
Yeah.
About the Dodgers broadcast had this narrative that John Gray admitted that he couldn't pitch at Coors Field, that he wasn't tough enough, that he wasn't smart enough, and doggone it, people didn't like him.
Right. He said something along the lines of, I don't know if I'll ever be able to compete here, which never happened.
Now, so let's enlighten people who may not have seen that on the Twitter last night.
So last year, John Gray gave some post-game comments in which he rightly and understandably said, this place is a whole lot different for me to pitch, and I need to figure out how to make an adjustment here.
But Gray was very rough at Coors Field last year.
Yeah, last year was not an easy season for John Gray. But the difference is, and I'm trying to find the link to the story in which he was quoted by Nick Groke, our good pal of the Denver Post. John Gray, and the headline was John Gray battling high anxiety as Rockies rookie at Coors Field. Now, to an extent, there's some, you know, the framing of some of this would lead you to think certain things. But, quote, I've pitched fine on the road, Gray said. I just can't find that whatever it is to make an adjustment to pitch in this place. He continued later. I feel like my road numbers are good, but here they're really bad. If I can just, I don't know if it's setting my sights on pitches or what, but I have to make a change fast. I have to pitch here. Later on, it's been difficult for me, especially when you come from a road start and you come here. You can't start pitches where you used to. You really have to shorten it out and expand. And then this is the money quote. It's not like this place is an excuse. You have to know your environment. It's on me. The other guy has to pitch here, too. You have to beat the other guy mentally. The very first thing he said, it's not like this place is an excuse. And he later added, quote, it's all mental, really. It's the way you have to pitch here. I know I'll figure it out. It's not like it's something that will be tough forever. It's just an adjustment. But the Dodgers crew has been running, and to be fair, I really like Joe Davis, Nomar, and Oral Hershiser. If I could tell their voices apart, maybe I would like them to.
Well, the closed captioning lady in the bar I was at watching the game was able to do so.
Really?
It said, Joe, well, Nomar, that's Oral.
That's her job.
Just saying, good for her. Anyway, or him, I don't know why I said it or her. Good for them. Yeah.
The guy's first name is Oral.
Anyway. No, but John Gray last year,
ERA
at home.
Literally
ERA at home
said,
was 8.27.
Yeah, it was awful.
8.27 last year.
It was
on
awful.
The road, it was 2.70.
But to present it as John Gray said he didn't think he'd ever be able to pitch here is fundamentally incorrect. John Gray never said anything of the sort.
Screwing that chicken, too.
Exactly.
It was constant.
And the
every other time.
The thing that's really annoying about it is the Denver media, because in the never dry well for hot takes, the Denver media has run with that too. Of, well, John Gray let Coors Field get in his head. No, John Gray made a comment about pitching in a hitter's ballpark. Basically, if John Gray had made that comment in Cincinnati or in Philadelphia, nobody cares.
Right.
But because he makes it at Coors Field, everybody freaks the hell out. And now this year, he is unstoppable at Coors Field.
Yeah, 5-0, 3.83 ERA. He has taken his home ERA down 4.5 runs this year.
You know what's a little weird, too? His command seems to be better at Coors Field. On the road, he struck out 59 and 60 and two-thirds, and he's walked 25. At home, he struck out 61 and 54 innings and only walked 12. Opponents are batting 225 against John Gray. They're hitting 221 against him on the road.
Yeah, the opponent OPS 680 at home, 657 on the road. He is basically the same pitcher at home and on the road. That happened in half of a year that he was able to make those adjustments and get everything normalized.
Oh my God. Stop letting me get excited and happy about things. There are like other things that I'm excited and happy about in life too, and it's all coming together at one time, and I know that no benevolent God will let that continue. So something awful is on the horizon, and I just don't want it to be the Rockies. I don't want it to be the Rockies.
His ERAs by month for John Gray: April 11.42 in two starts, May 4.17, June 3.77, July 1.89, August 0. Do you notice a pattern there?
Do you know what his ERA is after the All-Star break?
It's really good.
It's really nice.
0.69 in four starts.
0.nice.
But in this stretch, this last 13-game stretch where they're 11-2, the pitching staff has been awesome. As I mentioned before, the ERA of an even 2. The highest ERA of any starter in that time is 2.89 by Chad Bettis. Anderson, 284. DLR, 219. Gray, 0.95. Tyler Chatwood, 0.75. Everybody right now is taking the ball from their teammate with that, you know, that mojo that's saying, I don't want to be the one to screw this up. And we haven't seen that for a Rocky starting staff really since probably 2010.
Yeah,
when it was Jason Marquis and Ubaldo and Chacin. And those guys were picking up the ball every fifth day and going, okay, well, I'm not going to be the one to screw this up.
It's a very good point. And what has become benevolent God not going to let me be happy for long. What has become something that I was cautiously really into and down with is now something that is a regular thing, which is when John Gray gets the ball, and now increasingly when Tyler Anderson gets the ball, I'm really excited to be at Coors Field or be at a TV.
He's been amazing.
Tyler Anderson,
what we've seen so far.
Tyler Anderson has, in his professional career, never not made it past the fifth inning. He's pitched at least 5 2/3, which for a Rockies pitcher, for a rookie Rockies pitcher, is a hell of an accomplishment. He's pitched at least 5 2/3 in every single start, and he has completed the sixth in every start since June 24th, which was his third outing as a major leaguer. We talked about John Gray, ace. I don't even know if we have to say an ace in the making. I mean, obviously you have to sustain it for a while,
right now.
But the way he's pitching is a staff ace's duty. But Tyler Anderson is right there. Tyler Anderson is being a number two right now. 4-3 overall, 3.25 ERA in 10 starts. Opponents batting .278 against him, which is a little high, but 52 strikeouts against 12 walks in 61 innings. And a fascinating thing about Tyler Anderson, and our good pal Mike Petriello is going to have a story on this on MLB.com. And Tyler Anderson, even though he gives up a lot of contact, the exit velocity against Tyler Anderson of opposing hitters is the lowest of any pitcher in baseball, which is so fascinating.
Which, even a few years ago, we would see something like that and not really know or see a pitcher like Tyler Anderson who's not getting a lot of strikeouts, but was able to keep the contacts off. We didn't really know what to do with it. Like, Matt Cain was always that kind of guy. We weren't always sure why Matt Cain was so good every year. But we figured out eventually, when all this new data was coming to be tracked, that it was because he gives up a lot of soft contact and a lot of infield flies. But now we can look at Tyler Anderson and see all these stats and see why it's happening so well for him. I mean, it's amazing what he's done. The 3.25 ERA for Tyler Anderson, by the way, is the lowest of any Rocky starter in his first 10 starts in franchise history. It's almost by a full half of a run. Brian Rikar in 1995, he had a 3.74 mark in his first 10 starts. Anderson's at 3.25. That is pretty unbelievable.
Good at baseball.
It's hard to believe that this team, we left them for dead after they lost 2 or 3 to the Rays, and because they didn't look good.
No, they did not.
They did not look good losing 2 or 3 to the Rays.
No,
because coming out of the break, they had the Braves, the Rays, and the Braves again. We're like, okay, well they took 3 or 4 from the Braves. Well, they're supposed to, and they lost 2 or 3 to the Rays. Okay, that's it. Then they swept the Braves. Exactly. We go, whatever.
And we even said on the show, like, maybe to benefit the Rockies to go on a bit of a swoon before the deadline, make yourselves more realistic about whether you are sellers or not.
Right.
And go that route. But they started playing well. By the way, I just want to point out really quickly, did you know that Tyler Anderson went to Spring Valley High School and not Valley High School? Did you know
Nobody
that?
Cares.
You know why it bothers me? Because inaccuracies bother me. But every opposing broadcaster has brought up, Tyler Anderson went to the same high school as Greg Maddux. No, he didn't! He didn't. He didn't do that. He didn't do that at all, actually. Spring Valley High School is not the same as Valley High School. But I will say, one of my favorite things to do on the old internet there is to look at the notable alumni from a school. And Gary Payton's son also went to Spring Valley High School. There are two notable alumni listed for Spring Valley High School on Wikipedia. One's Tyler Anderson, and the other is Gary Payton II.
Gary Payton, former colleague of mine at FS1.
Oh, the glove.
I'm just kidding. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's true. He did restore it there, but it did not end well.
And he probably hated you.
He hated a lot of people.
I would. Well, yeah, he seems like an angry dude.
He hated a lot of people. I don't think it was just me.
So anyway, they're being really good. They're being really good, and I don't know how to handle it. Here's another thing to keep an eye on. Nolan Arenado.
Arenado.
In 26 games in July.
Yours, mine, and Arenado.
Yeah, that one. 26 games in July, he was very much not Nolan. Despite the fact that he still hit five homers, a .228 average, a .262 on base percentage, and a .475 slugging percentage, those were all season lows. And his .737 OPS obviously added up to the same. But so far in August, we have seen Nolan start to look like Nolan again. He does now have hits in three of his last four games, had a homer last night, a big homer early on. The Nolan that the Rockies need, they're going to need a lot more because of the lack of Trevor Story now going forward.
Yes, and Trevor Story tore a UCL in his thumb. He'll be out for the rest of the regular season. We'll start saying that now until the good Lord strikes us down. But yeah, that's a huge blow. And it sucks because he was having such an amazing season, doing historic things, already set the NL rookie record for home runs by a shortstop. He'll come three short of tying Nomar Garciaparra's MLB mark for home runs by a rookie shortstop. But if Trevor Story's year is done, a .272, .341, .567 slash line, a .909 OPS, 27 home runs, and it sucks. You feel so bad for the kid because he was improving in every single aspect of his game as the season wore on. He was cutting down his strikeout rate. He was improving his walk rate. He was still hitting the same amount of home runs he was when he had that amazing start. And this is one of those things where you look up to the sky and curse everything above you. But now we got big time Danny D taking over the shortstop position.
And they brought up Rafael Tough Out Ynoa. He's a
Can't
tough out.
Have to deal with Rafael Ynoa on this team.
He's a tough out.
Yeah, and that's what sucks too. The Rockies have a lot of really good things happening with their depth, but not guys who already come up and contribute necessarily at a major league level in terms of guys you want on your bench, on your major league bench. And that's why their major league bench right now is pretty weak. You know, when you have a lefty, you put Ryan Rayburn in there, and that's great. But you still got Christian Adames, Rafael Ynoa on that bench, and Daniel Descalzo, who's in the starting lineup. It's a much more depleted team than what we saw last week. Let's just say that.
Yeah. That is going to be the big key going forward. Do Cargo and Nolan come up the way you need them to with the lack of production from the shortstop spot? That's going to be huge going forward. I mean, if everybody else, if they can spread the wealth like they have been the last two nights, I mean, if DJ keeps hitting big flopping dongers the way he's been smashing the ball around, I mean, I'd be totally fine with that. But they're going to need, and David Dahl can't be stopped. But they're going to need Nolan and Cargo.
Even Daniel Descalzo, he's slashing .318, .420, .427. He's got nearly as many walks as strikeouts this year.
Why do you come to me? For this generosity?
Someone must have gone to him on the day of his daughter's wedding and asked him to be good at shortstop for a season.
The favor that I requested you today, Don Descalzo, is to be really good at baseball for the 2016 season.
It's Dan Descalzo, sorry.
Oh, his name is Dan. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Maybe.
David Dahl, even. I mean, David Dahl has a hit in every single one of his games so far. In his first nine games, he's got at least one hit, .389 average. He's taken a couple of walks. Does have 11 strikeouts. He struck out at least once in every game, but that's to be expected when you're a kid coming up and still only, 22 years old. But he's hit a couple of moonshots. He had three hits last night, his first career three-hit game. One of only three Rockies to get a hit in his first nine games, Juan Pierre being the leader with 16. And Ben Paulson 2 years ago got a hit in his first nine games as a Rocky.
David Dahl's really good.
He has been exactly everything that you had hoped for and we had seen in the minor leagues. To be perfectly honest, I did not think we would be seeing this kind of production from David Dahl right from the outset. I mean, with the exception of his trip at Albuquerque, he's taken some time to get used to a level. Not like Trevor Story where he may have to repeat that level, but he's taken some time to get used to levels. Maybe whether it's a month, a couple of weeks, whatever. Albuquerque, he went in and set the whole, you know, the earth scorched it, but he's come up and been exactly what you expected. And the power's been nice, too. I mean, he got a double, got a couple of homers, and he's hitting fifth in this lineup now. Fifth or sixth? I mean, Weiss is not afraid. Weiss is just throwing him in there.
David Dahl has hits in 24 of his last 25 games combined between AAA and the big leagues. And, you know, and it's not like he's just flaring out little singles. I mean, last night he went 3-for-5 with three singles, but he's hit a double. He's homered twice. He's had four multi-hit games in the major leagues. David Dahl, man. David Dahl's the real deal. We've been trying to tell you about David Dahl for a long time. And it's interesting because had a conversation on the old tweet machine yesterday. The Rockies came into the season, according to MLB Pipeline, with the, I believe, the fourth-ranked overall system in minor league baseball, and they've dropped back to 10th ranked. And the primary reason behind that is so many other systems have just gotten markedly better. New York Yankees system is loaded now. The Braves system is loaded. The Milwaukee Brewers system looks really good. So that's the primary function. But beyond that, the Rockies have graduated Trevor Story. They've graduated John Gray. And I think for all intents and purposes, and this was kind of the conversation that we were having yesterday, most people look at David Dahl and think, that guy's graduated. No, the full slate of games that you need to officially have surpassed your, you're no longer considered to be a prospect, that is a long ways off. But that's how good David Dahl is right now. And beyond that, you kind of forget about just how good of a prospect he is because so many other guys around him are good. Because we spend so much time talking about Raimel Tapia. We spend so much time talking about Brendan Rodgers. All these guys kind of make you forget about the fact of like, oh yeah, David Dahl's a five-tool prospect who is as good as any position player they've developed, arguably since Troy Tulowitzki.
Yeah. I mean, and the other guys are coming. And we saw Cargo tweak his ankle last night too, which of course happened on a night when we were all so happy about everything. It seemed, the initial reports, that he's okay afterwards, but you know, if they need to make a move somehow, who the hell knows what's going to happen next? If maybe get Raimel Tapia up here, who the hell knows?
That'd be fun.
Tapia's on the roster. He's on the 40 man.
He is on the 40 man. That is true.
So this is a question that I asked Richard from Rocky Zingers later in the podcast. You guys will get that interview in a little bit. But I asked him, with the Rockies' recent run of success, have you started to reevaluate your thought about Walt Weiss as a manager? Because there hasn't been a lot of good
Weiss
as a manager so far. But, I mean, right now the team's playing better. The team seems to be coalescing a little bit. Is there a reason why you would start to think that maybe it was not because of Walt Weiss, but maybe that he's been helping to facilitate this kind of success they've been having lately?
I really did like that question, and I will answer it this way. Tactically and in terms of his baseball decisions and baseball acumen, I don't think so. But I will say, I do think Walt Weiss is very well liked, and I think in baseball, maybe more than in any other sport, that goes an exceedingly far way. So I think when Walt Weiss has a meeting with his team and says, if you guys want to stop the trade rumors, you got to start winning, and then they go out and respond to that, I think that is an immense sign of respect shown from that team to their manager. Walt Weiss is never going to be Joe Maddon. But I think there is much to be said for the fact that he creates a clubhouse atmosphere that I think the guys really like, especially when things are going well. Obviously, you're going to be way happier with life when you're winning, when you're in a wild card hunt. But that I will say about Walt Weiss and where they are currently. What about you?
I'm kind of the same way. I think that it's been a while since we've really been excoriating Walt Weiss on Twitter for making a stupid mistake, so that helps.
Yeah.
So I think he does learn. If he has to be dragged into it, dragged to the 21st century in terms of analytics, in terms of lineup construction shifts, if that had to be the case over the last couple of years, because the Rockies have been one of the teams that have shifted the most of any team in baseball over the last two seasons. So if he has the right people in place that are explaining why they do these certain things, or why maybe a bullpen mistake that he made would bring in a pitcher or leaving someone out to dry, when that didn't work, if someone can sit him down and go, hey, this is why this was stupid. And he goes, oh, okay, that's fine if you can learn. But you're right. In baseball, it's a sport where sometimes it does pay to have a nice guy around, because like in basketball, like the NBA, the nice guy head coaches are the ones you get walked over, like the, you know, Jeff Hornacek's and, you know, whatever. Like they usually have crappy teams. Sometimes you need to be able to balance the personalities and your egos more than you have to balance the stuff going on the field, because yeah, one will lead into the other.
Yeah.
If guys are more comfortable, or if they're relaxed, or if the clubhouse atmosphere is more breezy, sometimes they'll be more relaxed. They'll go out there and they'll play a lot better. You know, some guys need to get kicked in the ass, and that's fine. But I think if you have a right group of guys who seem to have the same kind of mentality, then I think you need a guy that can, a guy as a manager, who can really take advantage of that and get everybody on the same page. I think,
yeah,
Weiss, we're starting to see this front office believes in this group of guys they have right now. Whether they believe that Weiss can lead that charge next year, I think the next couple of months will be very, very interesting to see how the guys react to, you know, being in kind of a playoff race late in the season for the first time in 6 years.
Oh, what? How is that happening? Entering the day today, your Colorado Rockies were 54-53, level with the Pittsburgh Pirates, three games back of the second National League wild card spot. One game back of the New York Mets, 2.5 games back of the Miami Marlins, who come to town this weekend, and 3 games back of the St. Louis Cardinals, who are currently in that second spot. And, oh, by the way, gaining some ground on the Los Angeles Dodgers, who they have now beaten in 2 straight, and they're only 5 games back of the Dodgers in the division. And if you want a dream, they're only 7 games back of the San Francisco Giants, who have not played great ball as of late. The Giants are 3-7 in their last 10 and really haven't looked good since the All-Star break. Whoa. What is happening?
It's all happening.
It's all happening. All right, I know you got to get out of here to go to work, so let's toss it to our interview segment for this week, and that is Richard Bergstrom from Rocky Zingers, who's coming up on the show. We'll be back to wrap things up here in just a few minutes, and oh, man, they're playing good baseball. Richard Bergstrom coming up next. Very long overdue interview that we've had on the Purple Dinosaur podcast coming for a long time is our good pal Richard Bergstrom, who is on Twitter at Rocky Zingers, and finally bothered us enough for us to get him on the show. Richard, welcome. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. So, you know, I mean, obviously the topic of the moment, they're over 500. They're in the wild card hunt. Just quick gut check reaction. This is something that we've discussed a little bit. It feels almost, and I don't want to say it's to this extent, but it feels almost like the Cubs last year, where they're on the scene a year earlier than people expected. Do you think they're going to hang around in this?
Well, you know, the funny thing is that, you know, for the last few years, they've been talking about how we got this great farm system and no one was panning on out. I think it's starting to, not quite to the extent of the Cubs, where they just had, you know, everybody and their brothers coming up as superstars and just, you know, Javier biasing the league for a few days. I don't think the Rockies had been that extreme. You know, you have people like John Gray, who they came on up last year. They struggled for a little while, but you still saw some potential, and they just kind of come into their own. So, I mean, in terms of Cubs, I mean, you know, you've got the farm system there, but a lot of what they're doing, it's not like out of this world crazy. Even Trevor Story, people figure he'd come on up, he hit home runs. Maybe not as many, but they'd come on up and hit home runs. There's a lot of what the Rockies are doing right now that's very sustainable, and it's playing on out very, very well. It looks like good baseball on both sides of the field.
Yeah, it starts with the pitching, too. I mean, obviously you mentioned John Gray already. What he's been doing has really been unprecedented in Rockies franchise history. But guys like Tyler Anderson, who we really didn't know what to expect from at all, coming in having the season he's having, his first 10 starts have been ridiculous. Chatwood has been good. Chad Bettis has been a lot better lately. Even De La Rosa has been good. Is there a magic potion that these guys needed to do to figure out how to finally pitch and get it together all at the same time?
Well, you know, they talked about bringing this pitch-to-contact mentality, and looking at last year, you know, not only were Rockies giving up a lot of hits, but they're also leading the league in walks allowed and, like, near the bottom of the league in strikeouts, which, I mean, pitch-to-contact, you're trying to put the ball in play, but you shouldn't be walking people. Now, our ERA looks bad, and that's generally because of course it's always going to look bad. We're generally going to give up more hits than your average Joe, but the walks are down a lot. The strikeout, so the walk rate's about middle of the pack right now, and the strikeout rate's gotten a tick better. I think, and it's not just one person doing it. It's across the board where the pitching is actually starting to live up to that philosophy of not so much pitch contact, but having quality and efficient outings, not getting yourself in trouble, you know, throwing strikes and then, you know, and throwing strikes that people will swing and miss on. It's been one guy, even if you look at somebody like Chatwood, like he's got this severe split between his home and his road ERA, and eventually that road ERA is probably going to even on out. He's generating the ground balls. Until recently, the walks haven't been hurting him. Now they're starting to hurt him. But nothing that any particular pitcher is doing, even John Gray, is that outlandish from what the expectations were. Before the season, Christina Kahl from ESPN had as her bold prediction for the Rockies that John Gray would be the first pitcher in Rockies history to have a sub-4 ERA and about a strikeout an inning, and he's on pace for doing that. I think you know, maybe it's a matter of just, you know, everybody buying in from the ground up. People from the farm system have been instructed in a certain style, bringing that up to the major leagues. Maybe the Rockies getting better at identifying pitchers that succeed well, maybe based off of fastballs and spin rates, but it's paying on off, not just in, you know, win losses, but at the underlying rate stat level where, you know, you look at the numbers and say, hey, this is legit. This isn't just one month, one person doing amazing, and everybody else, you know, just kind of floating along. Everybody's gotten a little bit better, and it's been realistic.
Richard, when you, you know, look at a staff that has performed this way, the conversation going into this week was, were the Rockies going to be buyers? Were they going to be sellers? Jorge De La Rosa obviously needing, you know, a new contract. Boone Logan needing a new contract. Guys who are going to be free agents. And then on the other side, I think we, to an extent, I think our good pal at Rockies versus Connor put it well when he said, I think we all talked ourselves into thinking that there would be a market for people like Nick Hundley, Daniel Descalso. But the Rockies, I mean, either way, stand pat, and they hold on to guys who could have been some assets to be dealt and spun into talent for possible future seasons. What was your reaction to the trade deadline, the fact they didn't make any moves?
Well, as much as we like to talk about stats, there is a human component to this, and there is some moral value to saying, hey, let's try to finish at 500 or close to 500 as we can. Let's not rock the boat too much. I think they should have traded Hundley. I think they should have traded Logan and gotten value for it, but I do think that we overrated, first off, how much value to be returned, and also we underrated the moral prospect as well, is trading your quote-unquote starting catcher at the deadline. Is that worth falling below 500, is that worth a grade B prospect you might not pan out? Now, the Rockies historically don't do that many trades and don't do that much during the trading deadline anyways. And it's been interesting how, you know, whether we're talking about winning seasons or losing seasons or the last few seasons, but the Rockies generally stand pat at the trade deadline, and we talk about whether the Rockies are actually smart about that or not smart about that. And I'm not necessarily sure if the Rockies stood pat intentionally or not, or if that's just they prefer to do their business during the off season. Overall, I think, you know, there weren't any real obvious places to upgrade or buy at. Maybe an extra bullpen arm, particularly lefty, since McGee has been struggling a little bit. I think that there's also argument as well for trading Logan and trading Hundley to getting some kind of prospect value back. But, you know, is that necessarily worth risking, you know, a 500 season? I mean, Hundley isn't that valuable of a catcher performance-wise. But, you know, if right now you're in the middle of a hot streak, you really want to lock that boat at this time. And I don't know if anything that Hundley would have gotten back would have been worth it. And a lot of the left-handers, a lot of the people who were interested in Logan ended up going for Miller and Chapman instead. So I don't know how much value, you know, the Rockies would have gotten for Logan either.
Well, I think the fans were frustrated for the most part just because the fact they do see the depth. And they saw the depth coming up this year. And there were plenty of guys they heard about in the minor leagues all of a sudden coming up and performing well, especially with you have a guy like Tommy Murphy, who has done so well in AAA, who has literally hit over 500 for the month of July in AAA. And Tony Wolters has been a very good defensive catcher. I think that's why fans were really frustrated when they didn't see a guy like Nick Hundley dealt.
And I love Tony Walters. I mean, Tony Walters is part of the reason sabermetrics exist, because you take a look at his baseball card stats and people think he sucks. And then you look under the hood and you see, oh, all these extra called strikes. And then you're watching the broadcast and you see it on Root Sports. And they're actually describing some of the things that I'm doing. He's doing. I think it's amazing. I think that Walters is good enough to be a starting catcher, maybe even over Murphy. I think that the defense is that valuable. The Rockies, for whatever reason, the last few years have never fired on all cylinders until like the last 2 weeks. They'll have good hitting, but they won't have good starting pitching. They'll have good hitting, good starting pitching, and the bullpen's all over the place. This is like one of the few times in the last few years where this last 2 week stretch, where the Rockies are playing good in all phases of baseball, and part of that may come on down to chemistry, maybe not to something necessarily Hungley provides, but I don't know if taking that away is worth locking at that point. There's still another deadline. They might be able to do some kind of waiver kind of a transaction. And I agree, on paper, it makes sense to trade Hungley, trade Rogan. But I also realize the intrinsic value of keeping what you got, running it on out. I mean, you know, and by the time it gets to the offseason, it ends up being a moot point anyways, because Hungley and Rogan are going to, you know, their contracts are running on out. So it'd be nice to get some kind of a value, but it's not something to overly stress for if we can just say, hey, you know, we want to keep the Rockies playing together right now as they are. On paper, I agree, should be trading. But when you take a look at the chemistry aspect of it, and it's something that even though, you know, you can't measure it, it still exists some portion. I don't necessarily know what the Rockies – you know, could have done, and you know, if somebody was interested back, I mean, as I said, the top people who were interested in lefty relievers, they went for other people, and Logan was never going to be better than Chapman or Miller anyways, so that limited the market, that limited the prospects you get for it. Hanley, I mean, he probably would have been a good fit for the Indians to finish on out the season, but the Indians, if they weren't interested, the Rockies can't make them be interested.
So, Rich, I got a question for you. Has your view of Walt Weiss changed? Obviously, Weiss has had a pretty rough run as manager of the Rockies for his first 3-plus seasons, but right now it's pretty much 4 years into his tenure, and the team is starting to gel and become more of a cohesive unit. Has your viewpoint of his managerial style changed at all over the last couple of months?
Over the last couple of years, it has changed.
Good or bad?
I think he's developed and learned as a manager, and I think that if he was in a system with even more front office support, particularly in terms of analytics, not that the Rockies have a bad analytics staff, but just I think it's one that needs more development and maturing. You need more than just a few people looking at baseball information. But if he, once they made the transition from Guyvet and O'Dowd to Breidich, and it really streamlined that communication, you could see ways and he was changing his game, doing things like trying to hit the pitch, the pitcher, doing shifts, some of the quote-unquote sabermetric buzzwords for evolving to how the game is. You know, from a team chemistry standpoint, players seem to like him. You know, but some of the things like I think base running mistakes do fall on, if not him, the coaching staff, which he is in charge of. Not being able to cook on all cylinders, I think, at times. I think that that would also fall on him. But on the other side, I think that he's the kind of guy who, if kind of like Quinn Hurdle, if you put him in a good system with a whole bunch of information, he would take it to heart and do very, very well. My other will be about life is that sometimes his bullpen management is not quite optimal. He sticks a little bit to standard closer theory. He doesn't necessarily bring in his best reliever when the game is on the line. But 3 years ago, he would do things like lead Matt Belisle out or Wilson Lopez and just get absolutely plastered for an inning. He doesn't do that anymore. He doesn't hang relievers out to dry. And even just in the last month and a half, and especially, like, say, since May, you start to see that as he's gotten more length out of his starters, the bullpen starts falling into place and the game kind of manages itself in a way. So I think Weiss, I don't think he's a bad, horrible manager. I'd say probably overall he's about average, maybe strategically a tick below, but I think that he's a learner. And I think if he's given good information and can see hey, you know, I don't want to be throwing Estevez four straight days or something like that. I think you learn how to adapt to that. And part of it is, you know, with all how inconsistent the starting staff has been, it's hard to just throw things together and look good. I think Weiss is a good shepherd of the staff while he's rebuilding. There's only two people I can think of off the top of my head who I think would be better than Weiss, but I don't think that he's as bad as people portray. And I think that he's starting, you know, now that the team is coming together, he's starting to make less tactical mistakes. And I'm not just talking about win-loss records. Win-loss records are results. The process is looking better. The idea of, hey, you know, I can bring on in, you know, Estevez or a short reliever in the sixth inning in a critical situation instead of putting in Christian Bergman, which is what was happening earlier this year. You know, using long relievers and long relievers make sense, short relievers and short relievers make sense. I think he's getting better, and I think he's a learner.
Talking with Richard Bergstrom, who's on Twitter at Rocky Zingers, and you can check out the site Rocky Zingers as well. And Richard, before we let you go, the 2016 offseason heading into 2017 is going to be, I don't want to say a pivotal one because the Rockies have so much on the way coming up through the system, but I think the way that this roster is structured going into 2017 will give quite a look as to what the Rockies believe their time frame is to compete. If you had your choice of, you know, a couple, three moves to make going into 2017, what would they be?
If I had a choice of three moves to make, I would get a shutdown left-hander because I don't think Logan resigns. That would be my number one priority. I don't think any starting pitching help is needed. I think a run at a good first baseman. I think there might be a matchup, say, like the Reds for Joey Votto, a left-handed bat who draws walks, plays good defense, and I mean, the Rockies have some salary room. I think that might be a good way to approach that. But there aren't really a lot of holes on the offensive side of the ball. You've got the prospects coming up to take care of the pitching side, so I would just say too. I mean, there's no, when you got an offense where you got an ex All Star or Rookie of the Year candidate at virtually every position, there aren't really a lot of places to upgrade. I guess a third thing would be just locking up what we currently have. Lock down Arenado. I'd actually see if we could extend Blackman as well. And try to, you know, go with what we have of it. I wouldn't make Blackman the long-term solution in center, but I think that if you played him out in left field and kept him living off of the Rockies, I think he would do great. So those would be my three things. And it's nice that we're in a position where we can actually, you know, joke about, hey, you know, this team doesn't suck. So
yeah.
What a concept.
Yeah. Well, remember, you know, like a few years ago, I remember that first Rockies bloggers panel. We're talking about throwing spaghetti at the wall and hoping that stuff sticks. We're at a place right now where, you know, Jorge De La Rosa had to earn his way back in the rotation. Chris Russon comes off the DL, and he's automatically thrown into the rotation. We have it where, you know, Trevor Story has to earn a shortstop job, or Tony Walters is in a position to earn a catching job. You know, we're in a position where people can fight for positions, and that means that we have more talent on the major league roster. I think that's a good thing. So, I mean, you know, if the Rockies spent this offseason and they don't do any kind of major trades, I would understand. I think that Breidich has done a very good job at a lot of the value trades and the, for lack of a better term, the bargain bin hunting, at least on the position player side. Like Reynolds, I thought turned out pretty well. I don't like the patchwork pitching, like the Qualls, Mock kind of acquisitions. But, you know, finding a lot of the long-term prospects that can sit in the minor leagues and cook for a few years, and because the major league has got such quality, we don't have to promote them immediately. Breidich has been really good at finding those deeper guys that we can allow to develop. And now there's enough talent in the major leagues where they're not called up from single A just to perform. And so, yeah, this offseason, I think, you know, lock down what you have, make marginal improvements, keep doing the value trades. Maybe dump Parra if you can, but yeah, I think the Rockies are in a good enough place where, you know, where in past seasons you would say, oh, if we signed James Shields, that would turn everything around. I don't think the Rockies are anywhere near that anymore. And I think that that's a good thing, that they don't have to do that.
Well, you know, I mean, at least there's a team in their division that went all in and spent a ton of money and made a big trade, and they're, you know, running away with baseball, as we know the Arizona Diamondbacks are. So the flawless logic of the Denver sports media continues to burn so brightly.
You just want my fiance to really hate you.
I do.
I'm pretty sure.
I do. That's true.
Well, take a look. You know, everyone wanted to, you know, Rocky fans wanted us to be the Padres 2 years ago, and that team's blown on up. And then they want us to be the Diamondbacks last year. That blown on up. You know, there's a lot of knee-jerk, and some of this justifiable reaction to what's going on. I mean, just 3 weeks ago, we figured the Rockies were dead on arrival. You know, and you know, regardless of where you read, the Rockies are going to be sellers at the deadline. And you know, as the Rockies got on this hot streak, it's like, well, even Jim Bowden said they're no longer sellers, even though he called them one of the losers because the Rockies didn't sell. You know, but it, you know, perception changes a lot as far as things go. And regardless of whether the Rockies should have been buyers or sellers, should have done value trades or not, you can see that there is more quality in the minor league system. You can see there is more quality in the major league system. That is process. And, you know, the results are, you got, you know, you have a few people playing out. You have, like, a Tyler Matzik who has issues. You have Ryan McMahon. He was a highly thought of prospect, and he's not doing as well. But you have enough other bullets in the gun so that the ones that do pan out end up improving things. And that's one thing that the Cubs did, where they had a whole bunch of good prospects, and if you flamed on out, the ones that made it on through would end up helping on out. And the Rockies, they're not quite as strong as the Cubs, minor leagues and major leagues, but they're at that kind of level. So, you know, the Rockies don't have to do any kind of major kinds of trades or anything like that. They don't have to be the Padres. They don't have to be the Diamondbacks. They should make upgrades where it makes sense. I rambled.
Richard Bertram is on Twitter. He is at Rocky Zingers. And, you know, winning cures everything. Richard, thanks for the time, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Episode number 83 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, nearly in the books. Our big thanks to Richard Bergstrom, who you can find on Twitter at Rocky Singers. Also, we feel the need, we should probably apologize for last week's show with Craig Goldstein.
Do we have to?
No.
Yeah, we probably should.
It was basically our best episode ever.
It was not our best episode ever.
It was pretty great. It was definitely the episode that led the league in what did I just listen to types of tweets toward us.
We had a lot of tweets going like, hey, what the hell was that? But to be fair, we warned you.
We did. We warned you. We warned you, like, vociferously. We were out in front with the warnings on that episode. But Craig will be back at Thanksgiving time. And a big thanks to Richard today. We are, about getting out of here. The Rockies play a day game coming up on Tuesday. So I'm going to head down there and try to nab one of these young studs from either John Gray or maybe some Tyler Anderson, maybe some David Dahl.
Maybe some Tyler Anderson.
We'll have one of these guys back. Maybe some Daniel Descanso. The day of my daughter's wedding. They did it, my boy. And I think that's it.
Yeah, this is
all.
It's an interesting time to be a Rockies fan. That is for certain.
I don't know how to handle this at all. I don't get it. I'm very confused.
It's weird, right?
Very confused.
We're trying to do what we can to put it into some kind of context for you guys. And we said this at the beginning of the season, we wanted this team to be like 2006.
Yeah.
Because that 2006 year,
right,
obviously the year before, they went to the World Series in 07, won 90 games. But in 05, they won 67 games. In 2006, they won 76 games.
Right.
And then they took the next step with that whole core group of young guys coming up, your Tulos, your Holidays, your Atkins.
Generation.
Yes. Generation. And they made that jump, and we wanted to see the team do the same. It was Clint Hurdle's fourth year as well, just like it is Walt Weiss's fourth year. We know his tenure didn't end well here, but you know, he was the guy at the helm for the 2007 season, obviously. Last year, the Rockies won 68 games. And this year, they're one game over 500 in August. So we wanted to see that kind of jump in this team. We want to see this team start to play better baseball. We want to see things that we could glob onto for the future and go, oh, this team could be good next year. We didn't. I'm not sure. I did not expect us to be over us, the team to be over 500 in August.
Nope.
At all.
Nope. And that 2016, that's when they started to fall apart. August and September is when they started to fall apart. And I like a team that's starting to bring it on in August. And rockest.
The latest that the 2016 was over 500 was July 12th.
Yeah.
They were 44-43. So basically a full 3 weeks later, this team is a game over 500. And we're just going to have to see how this thing is going to play out.
It's happening.
I'm fascinated.
It's happening.
I'm fascinated by what this team can do over the next couple of months. Because, yeah, you're right. In that year, July, they went 10-16. August, they went 11-17 in 06. Before ending on a decent note, they went 14-14 in September.
Not bad.
So
it's all happening.
We just have to wait and see if this team is going to start to fade, because the difference is with this team, the pitching has been there in a way that we have not seen before.
Right.
And they haven't really had a bad month.
Yeah.
They've had bad stretches in months, but overall, 11-12 in April.
They haven't had one of those 6-20 June.
Right. 11-12 in April, 13-15 in May, 13-14 in June, and then 15-12 in July. Cool. And already 2-0
in August. 2-0 in August.
So we haven't seen the team. Yes, the team has had some horrible, horrible series this year, or horrible stretches of play. They had the 6-7 game losing streak, whatever they did last month. But this team has been able to bounce back and not turn it into, like you said, a 6-20 month,
right.
You know, or an 8-17 month. We haven't seen one of those yet. And that's the most important thing. You can't let the lows of baseball take you over and really just snowball on you until you're, you know, buried waist deep in crap.
I hate being buried waist deep in crap.
Well, it's only happened the one time.
It's gross. I would not recommend.
Like, I apologize for it the one time.
You're gross. You're gross, man.
I said it wouldn't happen again.
Oh, man. Everybody go back and read Woody Page's column from May 17, 2015. Rockies have gotten even worse under new GM Breidich.
Is that in the Colorado Springs Gazette?
yeah, that's going to do it. 83rd episode of the Purple Dinosaur podcast in the books. John Gray never said he couldn't compete at Coors Field. Tyler Anderson went to Spring Valley High School.
Jeff York and Steel Beams.
Fire shirts, purpledinosaurpodcast.bigcartel.com. And Anthony's on Twitter. He's at Master Tones. I'm at Tyler Mon. We probably have some emails and stuff that we'll get to next. Until then, hey, love you. Rockies are above 500. Enjoy it. Bye.
Bye.